You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 145 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me for this roundtable discussion is the one and only Chris Robley. How you doing, Chris?
I'm good. I'm in Portland, Oregon. Normally, I'm in Portland, Maine. Psyched to be here. Had a good week.
It is nice to have you here. We're just waiting for you to decide to move back.
One day. it will happen. Do you know why?
Why?
Because it's like 55 here, and it's about -7 in Maine.
Yeah.
It's simple.
It is very interesting. When we were going to lunch today, we walk outside and Chris is, you know, it's actually a little bit unseasonably warm here in Portland, Oregon. And Chris was like, man, I love the weather here. I got to move back. It's so nice right now. And, you know, then you meet someone from California. They're like, oh my gosh, it's 50 degrees. I'm freezing.
It's so cold,
I got to
right?
go home. But yeah.
No, it's been good. I went to some shows. I've made some music. I kind of just go crazy when I come back here.
Yeah.
Work all day, play music all night.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Well, I just got back from a little short Christmas tour with Small Town Poets.
That's right.
That was a lot of fun. And
you should talk about the perks.
The perks. Well, we did get a very sweet hookup from the fine folks at Interstate Batteries. Great people.
Plug.
Free plug, because they unloaded a lot of free benefits on us that we couldn't have done our couple shows in Texas without their support. One of our guys works for a NASCAR race team, which Interstate Batteries is a main key sponsor of. And so they've been working together for years. And so they picked us up at the airport in a SUV stretch limo, and we had that in the driver for the 2.5-3 days we were in town.
And you can see a picture of it. What is it on Instagram?
Yeah, on our Instagram. Go look up Small Town Poets on Instagram. You'll see some of the photos of our adventures. And they gave us some other nice perks that I don't know if I should broadcast too widely, because
they'll have like 500 artists being like, hey, can you sponsor us?
Nothing illegal or bad, but it's just, it was a sweet hookup with a place to stay that happened to, you know, overlooking the Texas Motor Speedway and some other things that we got to do that were fun, and so that was a lot of fun. The funny thing is our keyboard player Danny, his son's a very talented musician, and for some of these shows we've been doing in the last couple of years, we've had him come and play like just some auxiliary instruments to help fill out the sound. And you know, Danny has told him years and years of stories of how rough it is on the road, how we've like, you know, all these things of breakdowns, traveling in a stinky van, a broken down bus, and you know, just really roughing it out there. And the last couple trips he's come on with us, you know, it's like we're being driven around in a limo, staying at a penthouse, you know.
He's
just
gonna hate when he goes back to playing with his like younger garage band friends and has his own band. He's just gonna hate it. He has a terrible attitude.
Guys, I just can't deal. All right, if there's no limo, I'm out. But it was a great trip. Yeah, there's lots of photos and stuff online, and it was good. We got lots of content. We were only together for, you know, a week playing shows and doing different events, but I had multiple cameras rolling, recorders rolling, and we also knocked out a bunch of other content for our Pledge Music campaign that we still had to deliver. So it was a good trip.
You can make a rattle and hum video, like the first half's black and white, and then suddenly in
there,
the
you
middle,
go
just Texas Motor Speedway. There.
But it was a good trip. One thing I totally unrelated to what we were just talking about, one thing I did want to address is we've been getting a lot of feedback. Chris, we've been getting some feedback about the audio quality of our podcast.
Feedback about the feedback.
Yeah, exactly. So I figured, you know, some people that have been listening, longtime listeners may be able to figure it out, because I think we've had these issues in the past. But normally, as we mentioned, Chris and, you know, back when we had the Bolt here with us, normally they're not sitting right across the table from me, because Chris is on the other side of the country. And so we've been trying to record the podcast with multiple people over the internet. And we have had technical difficulties after technical difficulties.
All different kinds of.
Yes. In fact, we were starting to record this podcast. I have my recording interface here that I use to record the whole Small Town, most of the guitars for the Small Town Poets record we just released, No Trouble, and it's not working. It's just all this digital noise and garbage, and somebody just doesn't want us to do this podcast.
It knows.
But so I bring this up because it has been something where we've been trying to figure out the best way, the best quality way to record over the internet. And there's a lot of podcasters that are doing it in different ways. I reached out to somebody I know who has a podcast and it sounds great. And even has this whole video element with people's faces. I'm like, oh, that's a really cool, you know, idea for doing the podcast in an audio way, but also using it for video. And he said, yeah, I'm using 4 different computers and then they're all tied together. Then it takes me like 5 hours to edit. We don't have that kind of time. And that's been part of the issue. We're trying to keep doing this podcast and do it in an efficient way. So we've tried things like USB mics, and we found out after a lot of trial and error that the one we bought that was supposed to be the highly rated USB mic was defective. We've had some other user errors. There's been some things where you can find online where it tells you how to record into GarageBand and there's like 60 steps and use these 2 plugins, and that destroyed the audio engine on my computer. So we're trying to,
Google Hangouts.
Yeah, we've been doing some Google Hangouts, and the audio quality there I've noticed is inferior to Skype. And that's probably what we'll do for now moving forward if it's just the two of us. But I just wanted to throw that out there. We're working on it. It's not like we're just, don't care. It's just we have to be efficient with our time in order to keep these podcasts coming. I can't use 4 computers and 2 days of editing to make an episode. And we've even tried, somebody said, well, record it onto a separate, you know, like you're have a mic on your end and record your audio to something else and record the person on Skype. We've done that, and the audio files won't match up. It's the weirdest thing.
That's,
and I have to keep cutting and pasting and moving it over. I'm like, this is more trouble than it's worth. And so we've tried a lot of things. We're working on it. I say all that to also, because I know a lot of people in the community out there have different ways that they're doing these kind of things, whether it's for online shows or podcasting. If you have some suggestions, I would love to get them, of like, hey, this interface works really well with Skype. It gets good audio, or whatever you're doing to record over the internet, let us know, and we'll try it out. And it just has to be something that can be pulled off with one computer and can be quick and efficient. Can't take all day to do, because they don't give us that amount of time. So, disclaimer out of the way.
Call for help.
Call for action. Yes. Anyway, with that being said, why don't we get on to some news?
Okay. News.
So we have a couple of news items that are related, and then one that's unrelated to the other two. Well, this week Facebook released its list of most talked about songs. You want to make a guess on the number one song?
Shake It Off.
No.
By, what's her name? Taylor Swift. No, but I'm wrong. Most talked about song of the year?
Yes. Time's up.
The podcast is going to be an hour long.
That's right.
It's just me thinking.
Yeah. Number one, Pharrell's Happy. Number two, John Legend, All of Me. I must have missed that one.
Misses.
Sam Smith, Stay With Me. DJ Snake and Lil Jon, Turned Down For What. Idina Menzel, Let It Go. That one's kind of, this is the whole year. So it goes all the way back to, last winter. Beyonce featuring Jay-Z, Drunken Love. Nicki Minaj, Anaconda. Taylor Swift, Shake It Off. And Magic with Rude. So that was the top 10 talked about songs. So that was an interesting list. Also this week was released a list of, Sound Exchange released a list of the top digital radio stream tracks. So this is really going to be the top tracks on Pandora and the top tracks on XM Sirius satellite radio. So I thought it was interesting to compare the two and just see how different they were. So here we go with the top tracks from digital radio. That's the artist. Let me see the tracks. First one was Counting Stars by One Republic. Dark Horse.
Katy Perry.
Yes. Demons by Imagine Dragons. Royals by Lorde. Happy by Pharrell. Roar by Katy Perry. Pompeii by Bastille. Radioactive by Imagine Dragons. Let Her Go by... The copy here is really small. Do you know that
Let
song?
Let Her Go. Yeah, I feel like I do, but no, it's...
We'll come back to that one. I'm looking at a graphic that Sound Exchange released, and it's pretty small, and I can't make it bigger, and it's hard to read that name. And then Timber.
Also by someone we can't read.
Top quality news reporting here. So anyway, it was just interesting to see the difference in those two lists. And the one thing, you know, we'll link to this article. The top 20, they also, Sound Exchange also released the top 20 streamed artists. And Drake was number one, Pearl Jam number two, and Rihanna number three. Weird. It was very weird to see that the top three artists did not really reflect any of the top songs.
Pearl Jam, do they even have new?
I think they had a new album earlier in the year.
Wow.
So anyway, some interesting stuff. Just now that we're, you know, in this digital space, we talk about a lot on the podcast how it's easier to track things these days and get artists paid for what's happening. But just that in the years past, you know, one chart might reflect a specific thing like the radio charts. And a lot of decision would be like, well, if they're number one on radio, then probably all these other things are happening.
Right.
And they'll get paid that for that as well. Well, it's interesting to see how, you know, the top talked about songs are different than the top stream songs, which are different than the top streamed artists. So, and again, that's digital radio. That is not Spotify numbers or anything like that. So moving on, YouTube is now offering creators with over 500 subscribers the ability to make custom URLs. So if you've been stuck with a weird or random URL due to availability, you can now go make claim on a new and improved URL. So this, if this has been an issue for you, you better act fast before you're in the same boat again. So it's not a huge news item, but it's something that artists should know about, and they're going to be snatched up fast. So I think what they've done is instead of it being youtube.com/smalltownpoets, it's now you can get a custom URL, and it's youtube.com/c/whatever you want. So I think that's how they're opening it up. So if you're have a name, you know, your name's a common name, or your band name has been snatched up, go to YouTube, check it out. If you've got over 500 subscribers, they'll let you do that, and it's worth doing and making sure you have a URL that's easy for people to type in.
That's interesting though, because I would imagine that most people that have conflicting names would do something like, you know, like Chris Robley Music or something like that. And there couldn't be too many duplicate of those, would there be? Maybe.
Not of those, but I could see that, you know, if it's a person's name, like, say, John Smith, there's only, like, so many combinations you can do. And I think what's also been an issue is a lot of spammers grabbing popular names.
Yeah.
So if you've got something that could be somewhat of a popular name or a combination, some of those, YouTube's pretty good at weeding those things out, but even when they weed it out, like somebody snagged Host Baby here, I don't even know if it was an employee years ago or somebody who just randomly snagged it at YouTube. There's never been any anything uploaded to that account, but once YouTube kills it, it's dead and gone forever. You can't get that URL back, at least right now. They don't release them back. So we even pleaded with them as a company, if we really wanted to go to bat and get some higher person and say, hey, this is our trademark, they would probably release it, but it's a big battle, and the average artist isn't going to be able to have the time to mess around with that. So this is a good opportunity. If you want to upgrade your URL, do so. Well, that's all the news that we have, that I have. It's been kind of a slow couple news weeks lately. So for today's discussion, we wanted to talk about something that just came up naturally between, you know, Chris and I. We were chit-chatting the other day about gigs and talking about good gigs, gigs that we thought were going to be bad that turned out to be good, gigs that we thought were going to be good that turned out to be bad, and just kind of talking about the idea of how do you determine whether or not a gig is worth it. You know, one that's maybe on the bubble. So there was, you know, some things that, you know, when we were talking about it, like if, you know, there's a club here in Portland, Oregon called the Doug Fir. It's a great club. Lots of national acts play there. Holds about 300 people. Great sound system. Great sounding room. Has a built-in audience. If they ever said, hey, you want this slot, the answer is going to be yes, no matter what. Unless, you know, it's on a Monday night on Christmas or something. Christmas Day is on a Monday and they're saying, hey, we got an empty slot. I'm like, well, you know, maybe that's not the best.
Leave the place closed.
Yeah, but it's something that, you know, pretty much going to say yes to all the time. But there's all the gigs and that we all come across that we're kind of like, it's questionable. And kind of the backdrop to the conversation is there's been a lot of talk in the last couple of weeks after Jack Conte from Pomplamoose posted an article about the tour they went on, and they spent a lot of money. They played 28 shows, and they said they lost about $11,000, and they in the end of it, but they paid like $100,000. It was a big chunk of money.
Yeah, they would say they grossed what, like 140 or something, and.
Yeah, it was something like that.
And then their expenses were, yeah, $11,000 over that.
So there was a lot of talk in response articles about, well, that's because you could have done this far more economically, or you played a lot of gigs. Well, you had some sold-out shows. You played a lot of gigs that only 150 people came to. And when we're in that situation, we make the call whether or not we should play it.
And they had roadies. They were staying in hotels every night. They hired extra musicians.
Yeah. So it's an interesting article to check out. You know, I think Jack's a great guy, and we've had him on the podcast even recently. And you know, but it's worth checking out. But what that spawned was a lot of conversation about people talking about when you decide whether or not a gig is worth taking. And we've been thinking a lot about that, and you and I were talking about it. And so
worth, too, is an interesting thing, because I think what spawned this for us was, you know, worth in terms of monetary reward, or for me, when we were talking about this, I had this gig that kind of all reason should have told me not to play it. But once I did, I felt renewed and like
tell the story, because the great point that. Well, you just tell it.
I just ruined the punchline, I guess. But and I left some of the details out when I was telling you. But basically, I had a weekend of gigs planned. One was a kind of like a county fair where there's like three stages. And a friend of mine had told me, you got to do that show because you're going to meet a bunch of people. It'll be a great opportunity for like finding other gigs and stuff. So anyways, I applied to this. I got into it. That was booked. And then the next day, I was going to drive down to Cape Cod and play at this sort of singer-songwriter series in a town I'd never been to. I had no, you know, knowledge of any fans there or anything like that. And so my wife and I are talking, and we had a busy summer. So she's kind of like, you know, maybe just cancel that one. Just do the county fair that's like close by to home. Like, you've already heard that it's going to be great opportunity. Anyway, so the weekend comes, I go and I do the county fair, and I'm the first musician of the day on the middle day of the festival. There's people there, but no one cares. They're all there for other things. Like, so this great opportunity ended up being nothing. Like,
were you paid for that one?
I was paid. So I wouldn't say I was paid enough to make the, you know, it wasn't paid enough to like make the time worth it. I had an okay time. Wasn't a disaster. It just didn't yield the things I was expecting. Then I went the next day to the one that I had low expectations for. Show up, play to this room of like the most beautiful, attentive audience I've ever played for. Totally captive, like hanging on every word, laughing at jokes. I felt comfortable and confident and everything you want from a show. It was like perfect. And before the show, this guy shows up and he's like, hey, are you Chris? I said, yeah. And he's like, I have all your albums. Will you play these songs? And his wife is going off about how much they love me. And I'm like, this is awesome. Like, I thought I was going to show up and play to no one. And it was my favorite show. I don't know, maybe not ever, but it was awesome. And I did get paid for that, but it wasn't about the money. It was just that like perfect show where I went home the next day. I was like, of course, this is why you make music. Like, everything was right. I mean, and it renewed my sense of everything. It was, I'm like glowing just talking about it now. You can't
you
see the glow.
Yeah, I can see it. I can verify there is a glow. Yeah.
So, but was it worth it? I mean, I say absolutely. It was worth it for me to feel that renewed sense of purpose and excitement about my music. Monetarily, no, it wasn't worth it. I probably drove for 3.5 hours each way. I took a day off work, so I lost like that. Didn't get paid enough to really like justify the hours and all that, but like I didn't care. Like I sold CDs. So then we got into that discussion of like, what's it really about? And then at the same time, I had a discussion with my friend Naomi, who 3 years ago played a house concert where everyone ignored her. This is her telling. She hated it. She felt like it was a waste of time. 3 years later, she starts getting all these invites to house concerts and has built up like a pretty, like really diehard fan base. And when she traced it back, all of these bookings for these recent string of house concerts came from one person who was recommended her music by one person that was at the really awful gig she played. Mm-hmm. And she's like, it just goes to show you can't judge the results of something you're doing immediately. So then it makes it almost more scary though, because then you're like, well, do I just cast the widest net and say yes to everything because I don't know where to put my energy?
Yeah.
And then that's kind of the question we're dealing with.
Well, yeah. And there was a couple stories that when we were talking about this, that where I was saying one was Hello Morning. We were playing at this venue in town that's reputable. I'd never played there before, but reputable for having bands and decent shows. And we got there, it was on a Saturday. We were supposed to load in at 4 and everything was running late. And I think we didn't sound check till 6 and got done at 7 or whatever. And the other band sound check. And then we were the headliners, and I put that in quotes. And there was a decent crowd for the band that played before us, so that I guess was like from Seattle or something and had a big following. And then by the time we got on the play, because they it was kind of their crowd, and so they played late. It was like midnight, and we had literally been there since 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Just because by the time we were, it was like 8 o'clock. I'm like, I don't want to drive home and hang out and then come back. I'll probably just fall asleep if I go home at 9 o'clock. It just feels weird to me. But anyway, so. We go on at midnight. By that time, there's like 25 people left, and we play. Everybody in the band kind of had a bad attitude. And literally by the time we're playing our last song, which we didn't play long. We only played like a 40-minute set. It wasn't like we still did like an hour and a half or something. They're like cleaning up the place. And, literally like...
the lights are
like,
already on.
Like dudes are like carrying, like the vacuum goes rolling by and stuff like that. And you're like... that was a waste. And so that mine doesn't have the happy ending like yours did, that where I felt like, okay, that's where I got to really start buckling down here and thinking, how do we pick strategic shows? And it's still a challenge because, I think all artists are a bit of dreamers and we feel like it's like, maybe this is something's going to happen.
This is going to be the one.
Because I've heard plenty of stories of artists playing a show to 10 people and one person in the audience happens to be a music supervisor or work at a big company in town and wants them to play a very lucrative corporate event or their music used in something for that company.
Yeah,
So you hear all those things and it's like, what if kind of thing. And my last story, and then we've got some bullet points that I kind of look for or that I kind of weigh of like when I'm trying to figure out if it's going to, a show's going to be worth it. But Hello Morning, we'd never played Seattle before, or maybe we'd played Seattle once, and we got another gig, kind of one of those gig swap things we were going to try. We reached out to a band in Seattle and got on this bill. It was a newer venue in Seattle outside of the main city hub area, and where this kind of community, they were trying to get venues and restaurants and stuff going. We get there, and this band's supposed to be pretty popular, and there was nobody in the venue, like literally nobody. By the time they played, we counted, there was 8. But of those 8 people, One was Ben Gibbard from
Death Cab
for Cutie, and Dave Bazan from
Pedro the Lion,
but he also is probably more known now for his solo career, and he's lesser known than Death Cab, but both of them are kind of like Seattle royalty, and so we're like, this is our chance. but of course, you know, they stayed there for it turned out they were friends with the opening band. I guess maybe one of the guys who had produced them. I don't know what the story was, but by the time we got up to play, they stayed for one song, and the sound there was so wretched and loud and horrible that they left, and I was like, what a bummer.
But that could have been
the one.
If the sound was right.
I'm like, all right, guys, this is it. I expect the invite for the next Death Cab tour.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm sure there's lots of anecdotes out there and stories, and it's something that all artists face. But I put together a quick list, and I know you have a couple of things of here's five quick things that I kind of look at. Like if it's a show that I'm sort of on the bubble about, and some things I kind of think through. One, is it in a city or market or venue that we've never played before? So like if it's that's the first show we played up in Seattle. That was kind of the thing. It's like the venue we had heard mixed reviews about, but it was really more about once you've played in Seattle, it's easier to get a gig in, like, from, you know, being a band down in Portland, being able to get a gig out of town once you can say, hey, we've actually played here before. And so that helps somebody from out of town book you. So that's kind of, if it's a different city or market, I might take a bad gig knowing that it could be bad, just to be able to help build the story of our reach being just beyond a few clubs in the same area.
I had that same one on my list. And the only thing I was going to add is that it's worth it if it's a market you really want to break into, mm-hmm. where you know you're going to be coming back, you know, if the opportunities are there. Otherwise, if it's just some random town, that for me is, I probably shouldn't play there. There's no reason to go.
True.
Just where there's a gig available, if I'm kind of like, I'm never going to go back there.
Yeah, yeah, which could be the case, you know, from here in Portland, there's like Seattle and San Francisco, but outside of that, there's a lot of small towns that aren't really music markets that it may or may not be worth to take a gig, you know. Mm-hmm. Second one I had was the sound and light situation, and this is something that when we booked this Small Town Poets shows for last week, that it was kind of last minute. Originally, we weren't planning on really playing more than maybe an Atlanta show, but then some things fell into place that made it work. And the one thing I kept asking was, what are the sound and lights at the places like what we're going to play at? Because if the sound and lights are good, then I am less concerned, and we're not, you know, going broke to play there. I'm less concerned about, you know, it being an amazing turnout, because I know if the sound and lights are good, I can capture so much other content mm-hmm. that tells the story of the band online. And to me, that can be worth it. But if it's a matter of, hey, it's a last minute gig, we don't know if anyone's going to be there, and the sound and lights are terrible, then I'd be like, you know what, let's just pass.
Right.
I'll hit mine, then we can hit the rest of mine, then we can hit yours. Well, the other one I had is if it's got a built-in audience. If it's a venue that I've never been there before, or it's another town, and you know they tend to have a built-in audience, yeah, it may be a gig where I'm going to have to do a freebie, but if they got a built-in audience, it might be worth it. And then the number four I had was if there's guaranteed money. This one is interesting because the top paying gigs that Hello Morning got were two supposed to be bigger events, and we got paid well, and there was nobody there. And it was really weird, both for different reasons. But we got paid well and played on really big stages.
And I remember you saying that even though it was an awesome giant stage, you guys made the mistake of filming it from far behind where yes. they could see that there's no one there.
Well, yeah, that was, it was one of our wives was filming. I'm like, it was somebody, whoever had the camera, I think it was one of our wives, it might've been somebody else, but they're filming the song and you can't see that there's nobody there. But like halfway through the song that sounded the best on the video, they turn the camera and there's like, you see my daughter standing there by herself in this big city square. And I'm like, ooh, don't do that. But yeah, so if there's a guarantee, you know, if it's a decent guarantee, I'm willing to take a chance on something where it might be playing to nobody. Because then it's, you know, if anything, it's a good paid rehearsal.
Money for your record or whatever you're...
And the last one I had, if it's, you know, if it's an opportunity to connect with other bands in the area and play with them, if, you know, it's like, and this has happened, I don't know, we might have even have done something like this together where it's like, hey, there's this thing, it may not be great, but it'll be you, me, and this other band that's really good. And it's like, if I'm getting to play with other good bands in the community and getting to hang out and know them better and that we can kind of build some camaraderie and kind of start planning some better events together, to me, that could be worth it.
I think I had basically the exact so I'll just read them quick to confirm. Like, if there's not going to be a guarantee or you don't think you're going to make a bunch of money, then you can at least look for those opportunities. Like, is the booker of that club, you know, someone who also books a festival or might book other clubs or, you know, like there's some kind of networking aspect to it. Is it a market you're trying to break into? If so, it's worth going and maybe playing for cheap or for free even. Then there's like the, how much will it cost you to do this versus how much you're making? Like, which I think is probably more of a concern when you're thinking about touring or like driving 5 hours to a gig or something. It's like, you really have to add up your gas and do you need a hotel or do you have a place to stay? Maybe if you have a friend that lives there, then of course go stay with them and maybe they'll get people out to the show. And I just had this very simple one. Like, will I have fun? Mm-hmm. I feel like there's just some gigs where, you know, like, that might be sparsely attended, but I like that venue. I'll go play there again. That's fun. Versus, oh, I got a gig at this awesome club, but I'm going to be super stressed about getting 250 people through the door on a Tuesday night. And like, maybe that's more stress than it's worth, even though some of these other pluses on the list might be fulfilled. You're just, more stress than it's worth. Who else is on the bill? Do you like the bands? You know, kind of, you just want to have a good night with some friends. And then just getting a sense of what the audience might be at the venue. Like, if it's a place you haven't played, checking out their website and thinking, okay, this is, you know, it's a picture of a bunch of hipsters dancing. And you're like, oh, I'm a DJ. That'd be great. Or, you know, I play folk music and here's this picture of a bunch of like older people drinking wine and I'll probably sell a bunch of music because... Mm-hmm. Old people like to buy CDs.
They do.
So, you know, gauging what the audience is and the likelihood of your particular demographic or whatever being at that club seems like an obvious one. So, yeah, I think we agreed on all of those.
Well, there was something you said that you kind of alluded to that I think was good. You mentioned the club booker. I think taking a gig that might be iffy, if you're helping out the club booker, that might help you get a better gig there later on. And that happened with, I think that's how we initially, one of our first shows at the Doug Fir here in Portland, like, which is, you know, a very nice rock club. I believe that it was like they needed a rock band to open last minute for a touring act. And there's, at that time, apparently there weren't many rock bands in Portland.
They all had accordions and banjos.
Exactly.
And long beards.
And they're like, can you do this show? And it was like a favor to them. So after that, not only were they thinking of us, but it helped us get a future gig there because we kind of helped them out in a pinch. So I think that's one thing that's good to remember, that, you know, a club booker is trying to do a job. And sometimes when you're helping them out, it may not be the best show because it might be a last minute situation that you kind of look at that and go, hey, we'll do this, but can we, you know, look at getting a date on the calendar, you know, maybe 4 months from now where we can get a solid, good date and have more time to promote it and pack this place out for you.
Yeah. I just thought of one other thing, which is maybe related to trying to impress a booker, but it's like, for me, that maybe the riskiest and most kind of stupid on paper gig I ever took was I drove with my band with like 7 people, from Portland to LA straight, and played at a crappy club that I'd already played in and knew it was crappy. And we kind of had a miserable time the first time simply because there was, my publicist was saying, like, there's a guy from the LA Times that likes your music and he wants to check you out. So like when we planned this tour really quickly to get there So I don't know, how long is that drive? Like
from here to LA?
18 hours or something?
It's, yeah, with traffic, yeah, probably take you about that long.
So we went and we did it. And I don't even remember how that tour was in general, but that gig was fine. But the guy from the LA Times wrote about it, and now I'm like, hey, I got a good review in the LA Times.
That's you got awesome. A very, very good, it was a very good review in the LA Times.
So it's like, that's helped, you know, in website, when people look at your press or whatever stuff, but like, yeah, it's kind of dumb, like, to drive that far, it was not a place that was paying, you know, like, play a free gig. But we knew there was that chance he'd be there and review us. I'm like, let's do it. That sounds like a stupid adventure. Let's go have fun.
Yeah, yeah. The other, you kind of talked about it a bit as well, when you're talking about looking online and stuff. I mean, that's, there was a venue here that, for some reason, it was Kelly's Olympian.
Oh, yeah.
That for some reason, that there was this little stretch of time when a lot of people we knew were playing there, and somebody we knew had a really good show there. So we're like, well, let's try it. It's kind of the room itself is fine, but it's like right downtown.
Parking is terrible.
There's no parking, and it's like it's not the, hey, this is where all the restaurants and hangout places in the evening are downtown. It's like financial buildings, and there's this random bar and venue that's been there for years and years and years. And they started booking bands, or at least getting more aggressive. I don't know what it was. It just was suddenly on the radar. And that was one where it was kind of rolling the dice, seeing if this venue was really worth playing, and just to try out this venue. And it ended up not, and we had a decent slot and a decent night, and it ended up being nobody around. Our fans didn't want to come to this venue. Other people's fans, it's not been a problem, but so that was one of those things where it's like, I'm see if the viability of this place, because this place will be easier to get into. If it's a success, it'd be easier to get into this thing for future gigs as opposed to some of the other clubs that we're always trying to get into. So that's something. So we've talked about the some of the things that we kind of look at when deciding on whether or not a gig will be worth it. And I'd love to hear what other artists think. And I know some people will take the stance that if they're not paying, I'm not going kind of stance, which is perfectly fine. That's a fine stance to take. Other people have maybe some strategies they take. If you have some and you want to weigh in, we would love to hear them. And you can do so by emailing us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com or calling our message line at 360-524-2209. And those are on our website. If you want cdbabypodcast.com, if you want to reference them later. But I wanted to kind of just throw out some warning signs that we can throw out there as a warning sign that you might be headed for a bad gig. And I think there's a lot out there, and sometimes the warning signs are completely wrong, but at the same time, some warning signs that you're headed for a bad gig. What you got?
Did you get some too?
Oh, I don't have a bullet pointed list for this one, but I've got a few that I can.
So the first one, which is something that happened to me recently, is you're getting closer to the date of the gig and you're still not on their calendar online.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
What's going on here? Then that's a problem within itself, because it shows like they're not really on top of promoting your presence at their club, which kind of means they're not really promoting their club very well. Maybe they're scattered, unprofessional. Who knows? Maybe it was just a bad year and they need some.
The funny thing is there was a club here in town that we've played together, Hella Morning and your band, that's out of business now.
Yeah.
And that was the one thing that drove me crazy. It was a decent venue, but you'd look at their calendar and it looked like only a couple bands were playing this week, and you'd call and like, beyond like next week, there would be no bands on their calendar, and it'd be like trying to get a gig 4 months from them. They're like, oh, we're booked completely solid all the way through. I'm like, why aren't they on your
calendar? Put it on your calendar.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts when a venue only does like a couple weeks out. I'm like, what are you like hoarding your promotional energy? It's called a calendar. Put it on there. As soon as it's booked, it gives the audience, you know, preparation time announced. And it also gives the artist some peace of mind. Like, you know, they've confirmed it because it's on the calendar.
Yeah.
So that leads me to a related thing, which is that you email the club in advance of your show just to make sure everything's confirmed. You want to know what to bring. Do you need to bring mics or whatever? And they don't write you back. So the worst case scenario of this is I was playing guitar for a friend of mine. I think I've told this story probably a few times on the podcast, but we drove to Oakland from Portland to play a gig. The gig was canceled. And that was basically the like centerpiece of this 3-day tour. We drove 10 or whatever, 11 hours, no gig, demoralized.
Perfect.
Yeah. So if they don't write you back, I don't know. Call the neighbors, get someone to knock on the door at the club. Like
that one kind of goes along with what I said. One of the ones I came up with was when you are trying, when they're being somewhat mysterious or cagey, or won't just answer your question directly about the sound situation there. Like I've been in situations like, oh, you know, we got this, blah, I don't know. No other bands had any problems. And and that's a big warning sign to me, because if they can't just say, hey, we've got this board, any venue that has bands on a regular basis pretty much usually has this stuff typed up that they can just, they'll email you a text sheet typically, or copy, or sometimes they have it on their website. Like if you, that they'll link you to, that may not be a public link. But when they say, no one else has ever had a problem, I don't know what it is, but 9 times out of 10 when I've heard that, I've shown up and it's been like one of those powered heads with 4 inputs and a little crate of cables all in a giant knot. And
no monitors on stage, just the mains facing out.
Yeah, so that to me is a giant warning sign. If they can't clearly communicate what their sound system is, you know, I don't expect them, whoever you're emailing, to be a sound tech. You might, a lot of times they will connect you with the guy, and that's even better. That's a good sign. If they know who's been assigned to your gig as the sound man and he's mixed the room before, that those are all great signs. But if they can't give you some sort of representation of what they have, that's a warning sign you're in for a long night.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be that they themselves own all this great gear. It's just that they clearly communicate what they have, what the expectations are. Because then, you know, if someone's website says, we have a stage that's 10 by 10 feet, please bring your own PA, or, you know, like, and I'm like, all right, I know what to expect.
Or if it says, this is what we have, a lot of bands like to, you know, we can make do with what is here, or if you want to enhance it with bringing your own, that's perfectly fine too. But when they kind of just, you know, it seems like when they don't know and they're kind of being, you know, a little shady, it's like, this is a stand in the corner and play bar gig and nobody cares and it sucks. And the last time I did that, there was a giant screen on the wall that was broadcasting the Olympics, and I was just watching the Olympics the whole time I was playing.
Wow. That might be kind of cool, actually.
It was the opening ceremonies, and I was just
weird.
So I was doing what everyone else in the audience was doing. I was watching the opening ceremonies.
I don't know if this counts as a warning sign. Maybe it's just obvious, but I think like pay-to-play situations, just avoid them. They're so stressful. Yeah. And like some guy is getting on your case to like make sure you sell tickets to your own show. Like avoid those.
Yeah.
And then these are a couple things that you kind of don't know until you get to the venue, which is usually too late, because like I'm not one for backing out of things once I'm already there, even if I know it's gonna be bad.
Yeah.
But I played this show once where we were on tour. We showed up. I probably told this story before too, but we were like, oh yes, can we get some drink tickets? We got there at like 6 o'clock, did like a little sound checkers. I don't even remember, but like he's like, oh no, I don't give the bands the drink tickets until they're about to go on for their set. I'm like, well, we're last. That means we're going to go on at like 11:30, which actually ended up being like 1:30. So I think we got our drink tickets sometime after midnight and had been spending our own money up until then. It's like, that's just so shady and disrespectful. Like, just because some other bands ripped you off, like, you know, if that burns you that much, just close your venue.
Mm-hmm.
Don't book bands. Like, I was about to let an expletive
you're getting red.
Yeah.
That lovely glow and hue you had a few minutes ago, it's all gone.
But anything shady like that where you can tell, like,
yeah,
they either have a bad attitude towards you or just in general, like, it's usually too late, because I think you should probably just go ahead and play the gig and be professional, but especially because someone might know you're playing and show up to see you.
Yeah.
So you don't want to inconvenience your fans just because you're working with a jerk. But anyways,
Yes.
I'll simmer down.
No, I really liked your one about the calendar, because that's one that always bothered me. The other warning sign I would say that comes to mind is if the promoter wants to have like 5 or 6 bands. To me, sometimes those dovetail into a paper pay to play type gig, which happened to a friend of mine, where his band, you know, they thought they were going to be the headliners, and they technically were. And it turned out, and it's a pay to play gig, and the way they went to it wasn't like, hey, you guys, it wasn't straightforward. So it was kind of like, oh, this is a pay to play gig we're in, and then they kept adding more and more bands. I think it maxed out at 8, and I thought this is going to be terrible. I show up to the gig because I was just going to check it out, and it was actually well attended. I was just like,
well, cool.
And I was like, I think there's even more people here than the 8 bands that are all waiting around to play. But yeah, it still was like, even though it turned out all right, and there was enough warning signs where I would have been like, no way, you know. But yeah, I think those are some of the warning signs. Or even
mismatched bills, unless it's really going for that specific eclectic thing. Like if you're on a bill with like, you're a metal band and you're playing with a hip hop artist and like some folk singer, probably going to be a bad night.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted your train of thought.
No, I'm just thinking there's so many things. I think checking out a venue's website is pretty key to me, as far as like, do they post photos, or even searching, doing a Google image search for that venue's, and seeing images and seeing what kind of experiences seem to happen there. But looking at a venue's website, you know, venues aren't necessarily going to have great websites. So even if their website isn't that great, doesn't mean the venue's terrible, because, you know, a lot of the venues, they might have somebody to give them a website, but they're not necessarily going to have the money or time to maintain it. But the main thing is if their schedule's maintained, that's a good sign, or just that it's a presentable, you know, they're trying to speak to the community in a presentable way. That's something I look at. It's not necessarily a deal breaker, but you know, that's a good indication of what's going on there. And so I'm sure there's lots more. If you have some warning signs that you want to share as well, so the things that you maybe consider whether or not you should take a gig that's questionable, or some warning signs that I should have seen this one coming, because this sign that said "Do not do this" was basically hanging out there, and this is what it was. That would be. We'd love to have you share. And again, our email is podcast@cdbabypodcast.com, and our info or our line that you can call is 360-524-2209.
You know what I always want to find out when we have these kind of discussions, and maybe you shouldn't leave it on your message, or you can if you want, I guess. I don't know if we'll get sued for it, but I always want to know, what venues are you talking about? Like when people complain, like, what's the name of the
venue? No one's going to sue them.
All right, tell us. Tell us what places to avoid.
That's true. That's a good point.
Give us your like worst.
I mean, because there's a lot of venues, you know, it's interesting, like you go to LA and the Roxy has this this kind of aura from the heyday of rock back in the 80s of, you know, the whole Sunset Strip being a place to play. And so it's easy for people to go, I want to play there. I want to have it on our resume that we've played the Roxy. But everybody I've talked to lately that's in LA and has played the Roxy is like, that place sucks. It's always pay to play. They're terrible. The bands don't do it. That era is over. Nobody goes there anymore. And, you know, they do have some bigger shows there. But so it's funny how, you know, some of us that, you know, don't live in a city that, but there's maybe a storied past about a venue that it may not, that story may be long gone.
Long, right. Yeah.
The other thing, the last thing I thought of was a real big warning sign, both the high paying gigs that Hello Morning did that nobody came to were thrown together last minute. That doesn't mean that the details were you know, like the stage and all the production sucked because they did it last minute. One was this Irish pub that did an Oyster Fest, and they took up a city block downtown, and they did it 1 year and they planned it out well in advance. It was a huge success. The whole street was packed, and a band that we knew had played it and said how great it was. And I don't know how we contacted them, or the guy that was booking us at the time had booked them as well. But they're like, oh, yeah, we want you guys to do this. And we're like, great. And the website was still last year's event, all the way up until the week before.
That's frightening.
And I was like freaking out, wondering if we've been booked. But then, oh, yeah, it's still happening. And finally, they got the website updated like 5 days before the event was supposed to happen. They pulled the event together, but they didn't really promote it, so we played to nobody. But we got paid. I mean, he paid us in cash, and he was like, guys, sorry, we pulled it together last minute. So that's always a warning sign, and that's where, like, if there hadn't been no guarantee in that one, we would have just, that was like $1,000. And we played to nobody, and he paid us without question. Didn't even have to, you know, get in his face. And the other one that we did was like a similar event that someone from the city put on, which actually, this is my final warning sign, and then we'll move on.
Don't play for the city.
We have some calls, and we have a call and an email we want to get to. But the final one, I would say, is a big warning sign, is somebody with a budget who's never booked a show before or done an event before, because that was the instance with that. In fact, this person was the mayor of this little small town that's just outside of the Portland area, and actually got run out of town for stealing money from the city.
Which is in your pocket now.
So we're now wanted as accessory to... But anyway, that was kind of a warning sign that the city had never done an event like that before. And there's been, in my history as a musician, plenty of events that I've taken part of, like where the promoter's like, we've never done this before, but we know that it's going to get this many people because there's 1,000 people here and at least 1,000 people are going to come. And you're like, you don't understand how marketing and...
Right.
And
percentages.
Yeah, at least 100 people said they're coming on Facebook. I'm like, that means about 10 are coming, right, if that. So that's another warning sign if somebody has not done an event before. You know, just be aware that they're going to be very ambitious, and they could pull it off. That's the thing where, you know, that it makes it a challenge. You're like, they're selling you on it. It's going to be big, and you want to be a part of something that's big and not miss out. But you just got to be prepared that it could be a giant flop. So that's...
So keep the cameras close to the stage and don't turn around.
That's right.
Film anything else but the musicians if it's a
get
flop.
Paid in cash. Yeah. Run to the bank immediately and deposit it afterwards. So, all right. So those conversations are always fun because it's something that we all run into. It didn't even matter how big and successful you get. You run into those gigs. You know, it was when Small Town Poets, back in our heyday, we'd play a couple of sold out shows in like 1500 seat auditorium, then show up at a gig for, you know, 40 people in a room that should hold like 1,000, and that kind of all those scenarios.
It's come like in. The Spinal Tap and puppet show.
We actually did play a stage that was a puppet show stage.
I think we've talked about that before.
Yeah. Spinal Tap is funny, but I've lived many of those scenarios. All right. So we've got like we mentioned, the listener line and email. Send us some stuff. We'll play it. We've got, I've got a phone call that's a really good phone call that I'm going to play right now.
Hi, guys. This is Tim calling. I'm part of a new musical project called Eli and the Strawman up in Niagara Falls, Canada. And we're just starting out, just starting to record songs, and we're trying to figure out how to strategize the release of the song. So just wondering if you have any insight as to whether you think it's better to wait until, you know, 10, 12 songs are recorded and put it all out as a full album, or whether there might be a benefit to releasing like 3, 4 song EPs over the course of a year. So if you have any thoughts about that, glad to hear them, and really dig the podcast. Thanks a lot for providing such a great resource. Take care.
Thank you for the call. I think she said her name was, it's either Cam or Tam.
I couldn't make it out either.
I couldn't quite make it out, so I apologize if I got that wrong. But thank you for the call. That's a good question. What do you think? I've got my opinions. Strong opinions.
First, I would say that within the last week, we posted an article on the DIY Musician blog that is called something like 10 steps to strategize your single song release. So check that out. And to answer the question, though, I'd say put it out. Put it out now. Start building your fan. Have actual music you can use to your advantage, whether it's for booking or for people buying and hearing your music. Build your fan base. And then what you said, once you have 12 songs, pick the best 10 and put the album out. I'm sure your fans will be happy to buy your full album at that point. Don't delay. The time is now.
See, I have a, I wouldn't say a different opinion. I would say I have a modified opinion, because I think, yes, if you're a band and you've got a song sitting there and it sounded like they're a new band. So I would say, yeah, put something up online. Because when you're trying to make things happen, the first thing people are going to ask you is, what do you sound like? Where can I listen to something? Even if you're just trying to get a gig. And I've done that in the past. You've probably done that in the past too, Chris, where you know, they want to hear something. So you put up a couple demo tracks or whatever. So I would say that's important, but, I think that the music will land better. I'm not a big fan of the releasing just single after single after single strategy. It works for some people, and a lot of people use it as more of like a single every month or something. If you're doing it that way and there's kind of a gimmick's a bad word, some sort of theme to it, I think it can work and be something that builds fans. What I don't like is when bands kind of release just a bunch of random tracks to me that seem unrelated. I'm more of a fan of at least approaching the EP, like doing four EPs that build up to the full album release. I've seen some bands do that, and I like that better. And the reason why I like that better is, I know a lot of people like to say that the album is dead, and, I tend to disagree. Even though consumers are favoring just buying the songs they want, when you have multiple songs by an artist being released at the same time, it provides a nice context for the musical statement that this particular band is making. And it's more of like, do I like what this band sounds like? There's lots of bands where they have an interesting single and I hear it and then I hear their other music. I'm like, oh, I don't like this, you know, but then I hear their other songs. I'm like, yeah, I like what they're about. And I think, you know, I know there's a lot of people listening to me right now think I'm crazy, but we had, I think it was like last month on the podcast, there was a news item where somebody did a study about what influences people to check out a song or how they hear about a song. That's what it was, how they hear about a song. YouTube was number one. And then I can't remember if it was number two, but I thought it was, but it was ranked really high, was that other songs by that artist influenced them to like that song. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things where you build context around a song and it tends to land better and connect better with people. We did this with Small Town Poets. We released a single the year before we had our first Christmas record, and it was after a long hiatus, and the single didn't do anything. It didn't, you know, didn't get people excited. Even, you know, we promoted it. But then the next year, people were like, oh, I didn't know you guys were making music again and all this kind of stuff. It was just weird that the song, just having that, it seemed like a small effort.
Disconnected from their association with you as like a working band that's putting out these larger things.
So yeah.
I can see that. It's like, oh, maybe they just put that out because it was lying around in the back kettle.
Yeah, and the other two things... One, I think from an artist perspective, I like it myself when I take time and I'm focused on creating. I think what comes out is better when it's more of like in context with each other, and it's like a big time where I'm just focused on creating as opposed to, you know, cranking out a song here and there. And some people are perfectly good at doing that and it's great. For me, I prefer to just like go into creative mode as opposed to playing out and promotion mode and stuff like that.
Well, and part of that thing you're saying is when you release an album, that's kind of the opportunity to get all of the publicity. Like, sure, blogs might repost your single or whatever, but really the publicity, like infrastructure or whatever, is still built around the promotion of albums and album reviews and you know, all the stuff that goes along with it, like exclusive previews on different blogs or whatever you're doing, but it's usually still in advance of the album. So
yeah, that's why, you know, doing four EPs and then releasing to an album, I mean, you can do whatever you want. There's lots of different strategies, and you in that article that you mentioned, there's a bunch there, and there's a lot of great things you can do with singles. That's just my personal opinion. I think there's more opportunity to make a statement when you do it all at once. Even though people are still listening to individual tracks these days, they still connect with a broader project. And maybe that'll change at some time, but that's just been my experience, both like what you're saying on the press and the fan side. The last thing I would mention is that I've seen so many bands start out and go, oh, we're just going to do, you know, we're just going to release a song. We've got all these songs, but we're just going to record this one and release it, or we're going to put together an EP and this is going to build up to the bigger album. And then they never do the big album. They like do an EP, but then they stop and put all their focus on that EP as if they had done the album, and then kind of all that other stuff gets pushed off and never happens. And that's happened to a friend of mine's band and other bands that I've seen here at CD Baby that I've talked to. And I think, you know, as long as it doesn't become a distraction, the way that you build a career in music for the long haul, in my opinion, includes having a larger catalog. And if you never get around to making that catalog, it becomes a challenge. If, you know, so that's the thing when people, you know, I've seen artists like they release their second single, and sure, there's pop artists that these days, that's probably all they should do because the rest of their album is just for fluff anyways. But I'm talking about the real artists, the people that listen to this podcast, the ones that want to go out there and make great music and build an audience and the, you know, by connecting with folks and not just because a marketing machine pushes it down everybody's throat. I feel that you're going to get more mileage by focusing on a larger catalog, a larger grouping of songs, and, you know, and I'm happy to be proven. I mean, I wouldn't say that's the only way.
But. I'm swayed. Now I'm amending your amending of my thing and say, wait a little bit, work on two or three songs. Your best songs that you have right now, get those recorded, put them up, and then wait another year or two, however long it takes you to make the full album. At least you have something out there now for fans to get and for bookers to hear and all that. But then you're building anticipation for anyone that likes that stuff to really look forward to the album. Gives you the time to make a good album, promote it properly.
And if you're brand new, the thing I like about an EP is the song that you think may be your best song, I may not like, but the second song on your EP, I might think is cool. But it also gives you the ability to do several different things musically that I, you know, I may connect with differently. So I, you know, it's more about, am I getting a fast food snippet of who you are, a drive-by, or am I actually getting to sit down and hear? And you know, the argument on the other side will be, well, no one's listening to music that way anymore. There's a fair argument there, but I would say it's not as much as people make it out to be. So, you know, especially if you're connecting, we're talking more about people that you're trying to build a relationship with, you're trying to connect with. We're talking about your first fans that you're building from the ground up. We're not talking about the folks that casually stroll in the club and happen to see you because their other band you're playing with is who they wanted to see, and they, oh, I like that, I'll go check out that song they just played on Spotify. That's not who we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, you're trying to build a relationship with press, with club bookers, and with those core people that are going to be your diehard fans. It's going to take more than a single, in my opinion.
I think we just gave good advice. We contradicted ourselves. And
we left plenty of room for us to be called out and still be okay with it.
Yeah.
So yeah, thanks for that call. That was a good question. And if, like I said, if you've got a question you want us to ask on the podcast, you can call the listener line at 360-524-2209. And we got an email here, a suggestion doesn't have to do with our audio quality. So
yes, I am dressed like Chris Bolton today. Actually am. I have that slovenly professor look.
And you know what's funny is this email pertains to him not being on the podcast anymore.
Well, I'm representing, though you can see it.
It says, hello, Kevin and Chris. My name is Steven. I'll leave his last name out to protect his identity. Huh. I'm a CD Baby member and longtime listener of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. I recently learned that The Bolt will no longer be on the show. I thought a good way to round out the roundtables would be to have a different guest for each roundtable. It might be a logistical handful, but anyone else associated with the music entertainment industry... I skipped a line. Might be a logistical handful, but would be worth it. The guest could be another CD Baby employee, a local musician, a touring musician, or anyone else associated with the music entertainment industry. You could give them a brief description of the talking points in advance, so they'll be up to date on the conversation. At the very least, it's worth a try. Keep up the great work. Thanks for your time. Regards, Steven. Steven, you've actually tapped into something that we've thought about and considered, and there are a couple CD Baby employees here that I think would be a good fit. It's just a matter of prying them away from their manager to be able to spend an hour with us and talk on the podcast and have some time to prep. And it's something I'm looking into. I think I do like having more than one person here. I like having people from multiple genres, that it's an opportunity to become more diverse.
Yeah, and the interesting suggestion about someone maybe from the local music community or something, it's like it's kind of a bridge between the roundtable format we'd had where it's the same people and kind of the interviews that you're doing with people. It's like you've got this outside expert opinion, but it's not like a full-out interview with them. They just
weigh in.
I mean, it does sound like a logistical nightmare, but might be worth trying once in a while.
Please see the beginning of this episode for logistical nightmare notes. But thanks for the comments and I think that's a good idea, and looking to do that possibly in the new year. I'm gonna try and based on some feedback that I get about what other people might be doing to handle some of those logistics of having multiple people recording them around the web. I'm probably going to invest in some gear in the new year so we can make this happen and crank them out easier, because easy is better. But bringing more people on the podcast and using it as an opportunity to add a little diversity is what I'm hoping to accomplish. So thanks for the email, Steven. Email us, podcast@cdbaypodcast.com. Leave a comment on the comment section on the show notes. Or call our listener line. It's always great to hear feedback and comments and whatnot. So, I'm curious. I really think some people will have some interesting ideas about how they decide whether or not a show is worth doing or not.
Me too.
Maybe we'll learn something. That's why I'm here. I'm just here to learn.
I saw a show this week with like a 14-piece band and a 20-person circus. So
that's a gig where you're not making money.
Right. they did 8 nights in a row, all sold out, but
that's
true. Split it between 34 people. But I'm thinking, no matter where you play, if you've got that going on, it's going to be good. You can make so that's the key to success. You need 34 people in your band.
It's, worked for some folks. How do you get everybody everywhere? I don't want to rent
clown bus.
I don't want to rent 3 Econo lines just to get us down the street to the gig.
School bus, paint it red, put a clown nose on the front of it.
All right. Well, I think we have definitely come to the end of the podcast.
We have to prepare for tonight's CD Baby Christmas party.
That's right. And Chris, good to have you see in person.
Yeah.
You're still real. You're not just some hologram on my computer screen. So cool. We'll catch you next time.
Peace.